chapter 1, reality. Do you remember the day you discovered your life wasn't going to turn out quite the way you thought? It happens to everyone, sooner or later. All of us have had dreams, wishes, goals, and expectations, which for a variety of reasons have not come to fruition. Plans fizzle, expectations come to nothing, trusted people let us down, or we let ourselves down. Dreams shatter or slip away. Has it happened to you? Plan A comes to an abrupt stop, and you're not sure if there's even a plan B. Maybe the realization hits you in the form of an illness or even a death, a terrifying diagnosis, or a sudden descent into the world of hospital beds and IVs, the sudden loss of a close friend or a family member. Maybe it involves a disillusioning church experience or financial reversal. Or maybe your shadow dream comes with divorce papers. You expected to finish your life with the partner you married, but your marriage is ending and you're hurt and disappointed. I recently met a woman from our church who had been happily married for almost 25 years. 3 days before our meeting, she had found an email that caused her to start questioning her husband. Over the next several hours, he confessed to a sex and porn addiction that included dozens of affairs over the past 20 years. I'll never forget the look on that woman's face as she sat in my office mourning the betrayal of her trust and the devastation of her dreams. But your broken dream may be completely different. Maybe, like my friend Dana, you just knew you would be married by now and have a family, but it's just not happening. Dana desperately wanted to meet the man of her dreams. On several occasions, she thought she had met the one, only to be disappointed. Now every wedding she attends is a reminder that life isn't turning out the way she expected. Keith and Sheila feel the same way when they receive a birth announcement or shower invitation. Their first Sunday at Cross Point Church, where I pastor, they asked me to pray with them. They desperately wanted to have a child, but for some reason, Sheila couldn't get pregnant. That was 4 years ago, and despite continued prayers and several procedures, they are still without a baby. Do you have a career dream that keeps being frustrated? Maybe you're trained as an engineer, but the economy is bad and no one's hiring. You were convinced God was wanting you to go into ministry, but no doors are opening up. You were sure you were destined for the corner office, but you're stuck in the cubicle. You've always wanted to be your own boss, but you can't get a business off the ground. Or you might be like my friend Brian. He's a great guy that has so much to offer people around him. He really wants to be involved with ministry in some way, but he wrestles with a drug addiction. Brian has been through several treatment centers and regularly attends 12-step meetings, but every day is still a struggle. You know what, Pete? He told me recently over lunch. I'm never going to do what I want to do with my life because of this problem, because of this addiction. I've prayed and prayed and prayed. Why won't God take this addiction away from me? Sometimes our disappointments are clearly our fault. We made a poor decision or we took the wrong path. Sometimes another person's poor decisions are to blame. Sometimes, honestly, it's a little of both. And then there are the times when life just seems to suddenly fall apart with no explanation. It just seems totally random. I was watching a movie the other night, one of those suspenseful edge-of-your-seat kind of films, and I'm not a big fan of that kind of movie because they tend to stress me out, but at least the movies kind of give you this fair warning when something terrible is about to happen. The camera angle shifts a little bit. The music grows sinister. A shadow looms. Something tells you, watch out. Don't you wish life was that way? But it's not. It's not even close. Because often our dreams seem to shatter when we least expect it. There's no warning. You can't explain it. You can't blame it on someone else. It just happens. Another painful reminder that life can be unpredictable. If you're like so many people I know, your shattered dreams may have left you wondering if God is still actively involved in your life. You may even wonder if He cares or if you're too broken and bruised to be healed by Him. You probably wonder quite a lot about what to do next. No matter what has happened or how you feel, please know you're not alone. Because here's what I'm learning. Everyone needs healing. Everyone. Everyone has them. Every one of us has been let down and disappointed in one way or another. And every one of us needs healing for our broken dreams. Everyone. You know, we all have this picture of the way our lives should be. And for some of us, the picture of the way our life should be and the picture of reality is just a reminder that your life is not turning out the way you had hoped. We all have dreams, little or large. We all have expectations, reasonable or unreasonable. We all have this mental picture for the way our lives are going to be. I mean, isn't that true for you? In your mind, you probably had it all planned. Where you would go to school, who you would marry, what your kids would be like, what kind of work would bring satisfaction and purpose. Maybe you dreamed of the perfect house, the perfect spouse, the perfect 2.3 kids, the perfect job. Maybe you saw yourself traveling the world or spending your life in service. Maybe you just hoped to be safe and reasonably comfortable. Whatever you wanted for your life, if you're a Christian, you may well have assumed that God wanted it for you as well. You might not admit it, even to yourself, but you were pretty sure God was going to sweep down and provide for you as only God could. The problem is, what you assumed was not necessarily what happened. See, nobody ever grew up thinking, I'm going to get cancer at 41. Nobody ever grew up thinking, I'm going to get fired at 57. Nobody ever planned to be divorced twice by 45 or alone and depressed at age 35. Nobody thought their child would end up in prison at age 20. You never imagined that you wouldn't physically be able to have children. You never imagined you'd get stuck in a dead-end job. You never imagined the word that might best describe your marriage would be mediocre. But it happened, and you're frustrated or hurt or furious or all the above. And let's be honest for a minute. Part of what brings up such strong emotions is the fact that it feels like all the other people around you are achieving their dreams. Their lives seem so put together. Everyone else is getting married. Everyone else is having kids. Everyone else is successful. Everyone else is healthy. Everyone else is happy in their marriages or content and productive in singleness. Does this sound familiar to you at all? If it doesn't, it will eventually, because as I have said, it happens to everybody. So what do you do with a shattered dream? What do you do with an unmet expectation? What do you do when your life isn't turning out the way you thought your life was going to turn out? What do? When you have to turn to plan B? That's what I want to explore in this book, because to tell you the truth, I need the answers as desperately as you do. I would never pretend to know what you're going through. I would never assume that I understand the pain or the confusion that you may be experiencing. But I have personally experienced shattered dreams. I'll tell you about a few of those later. And I've walked with a countless number of people through unspeakable loss. I planted my first church in Morgantown, Kentucky, just a few months after graduating from college. Not that I have a clue what I'm doing these days, but back then I was absolutely lost. I knew God had called me to start the church, but I had never been a pastor, and I was 21 years old. I had begun to work my way through seminary, but no seminary could ever fully prepare me for what I would experience as a new pastor. Morgantown Community Church, although growing fast, was still a fairly small church the first few years I was the pastor. The small size was a great fit for me because it allowed me to spend a lot of time with the people in our church. And some of my favorite people in that church were Dan and Kimberly Flowers. The church was only a year or so old at the time, and they had been there for pretty much since the beginning. They were the perfect volunteers. They spent countless hours serving and were willing to do anything that was needed. Then all of a sudden, Dan and Kimberly just seemed to disappear. We didn't see them for several weeks. I called one afternoon to check up on them, and they invited me out to their house. They said they wanted to explain to me why they had stopped attending MCC, and they did. That night over dinner, they were nervously telling me that they couldn't come back to church because their unwed 20-year-old daughter, Kelly, was pregnant. That dinner was just the beginning of a sweet experience of grace for the Flowers family and for our entire church. I told Dan and Kimberly that not only would they be welcome back to MCC, but that nothing would make me happier than to see Kelly get involved as well. They took me at my word, and I was so proud of our congregation over the next several months as they willingly and generously reached out to that family. Week by week, as Kelly's pregnancy progressed, I could see her life being transformed by the love of God's people. One of the proudest moments as a pastor was showing up one Saturday afternoon at the church office to get a little work done, only to walk in on a group of women holding a baby shower for Kelly. They were laughing and crying together, doing their absolute best to help. Most of the women in that room couldn't have been more different from Kelly, and yet they were extending a love that was beyond themselves. The highlight of the shower was a beautiful white dress with little pink flowers that one of the women had bought. Kelly was so excited. She immediately squealed, "This is the dress that she's going to wear home from the hospital." I remember getting into my car that afternoon thinking, this is what God's church is all about. Since I had walked the path with this family, I asked Kimberly if she would just please call me when Kelly went to the hospital to have the baby. When the call came, I rushed out to the hospital, which was located about 30 minutes from our small town. I sat in the hallway waiting for Dan. I'm not sure which of us was more nervous. This was Dan's first grandchild, and it was my first time as a pastor walking a church member through this kind of process. While we sat there chatting, Dan asked me if I knew what Kelly had named the baby. He went on to tell me she had chosen to call the baby Grace, and he thanked me for everything the church had done to show God's love to Kelly. I just sat there in total amazement at everything God had been doing through our church and through this family. But then I started to notice an unusual amount of traffic going in and out of Kelly's room. All of a sudden, Kimberly stuck her head out the door. "Please pray," she begged. "Something is terribly wrong." My heart started to beat fast. My hands got a little shaky. What could possibly be going wrong? She's just having a baby. For the next 10 minutes, Dan and I just sat there, not saying a word, but praying like never before. When Kimberly came out again, she was crying uncontrollably. She finally calmed down enough to tell us that Kelly's baby had been stillborn. Apparently, the umbilical cord had wrapped around the baby's neck, and despite the doctor's best efforts, they had not been able to resuscitate little Grace. I would like to tell you that in that moment, I stepped up to the plate and I did something really pastoral, quoted scripture perhaps, or led the family in a prayer, but I didn't. No words came to my mouth. No pastoral thoughts popped in my mind. I just stood there in silence and watched Dan and Kimberly cry and hold one another. Then Kimberly said those words that still make me nervous to this day when I think about that very moment. She said, "Pete, Kelly would like to see you." I remember thinking, like now? I wanted to come up with an excuse and take off. I wanted to run and hide. I just knew I couldn't go in there. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I walked into the room completely ill-prepared for that moment. I still remember how dark it seemed. There were no noises except for a faint beeping coming from one of the monitors. Most of the medical personnel had cleared out, and there was Kelly sitting on the bed, holding Grace. I sat by her bed, and she kept stroking the baby's head, speaking to her little girl as if the baby's lungs were full of air and that little heart was still beating. After about an hour, she looked at me with big tears in her eyes and simply asked, "Why?" I didn't know what to say, so I didn't say anything. "It just doesn't make sense," she added. "After all that God has been doing over the past few months to restore my relationship with my parents and to show me who He is, why would it all end like this?" I never answered her question that day, mainly because I didn't have a good answer. As I sit here almost 12 years later, I still don't know that I have a good answer. I think we all have questions that plague our minds. For many people, it's the basic question of, does God exist? I don't wrestle too much with that one. In my opinion, there's just too much evidence of God's existence for me to spend very long questioning it. No, the question that resurfaces for me again and again and again has more to do with the unexplainable pain and hurt in this world. The greater struggle for me is that God does exist, and yet so does a lot of pain and suffering. There are so many Kellys in this world, so many broken dreams, and while I've spent a lot of time studying and pondering, I have to be honest and say I'm still not sure that I understand why. I stayed with Kelly and her parents the rest of the afternoon. There was really very little conversation. Most of the time we just sat there silently praying and staring at one another in disbelief. At one point, Kelly decided that she wanted to dress Grace before the funeral home came to pick up the body. They took the baby away in that pretty little white dress with the tiny pink flowers. I cried the whole way home that night. I cried because I hurt for Kelly and for her family. I cried because I didn't feel like praying. I cried because I couldn't understand why God would allow this. 3 days later, a handful of pallbearers would follow me carrying a little wooden casket up a hill where we would bury baby Grace. As we walked toward the hundreds of people gathered around the gravesite, I wondered, how am I going to explain this to my church? How do I tell them that God didn't show up? The following question would haunt me for months. What do you do when God doesn't show up for you in the way that you thought God was going to show up? In a way, those questions still haunt me, but I've learned a few things since then that have helped. I've learned a few more things about the plan Bs of life, mostly through spending time with people in the Bible who face their own shattered dreams. I'm not sure where you are with your faith. You may not have a relationship with God. You may not believe in the Bible. But if that's true, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. I'm going to ask you to suspend your judgment. I'm going to ask you that you remain open-minded throughout this journey that we take together. Even though we'll be spending some time in the Bible, you might be surprised where we end up. On the other hand, you may have grown up in the church. Maybe you've read the Bible all your life, but you've still reached the point where what you thought you knew doesn't seem to be working anymore. You're confused, lost, and possibly annoyed because God hasn't seemed to deliver the way so many over the years have promised you He would. I'm praying that this journey provides a new perspective on the promises of God. I'm praying you won't jump to the end of some of these stories that you've heard a million times, but you will read with fresh eyes. You know, I've never heard of anyone's journey of faith that hasn't had a Plan B story, a time in life when a person was going through something completely unexpected, a time when she felt as if God was a long, long, long way away, if He existed at all. Those were the times when the stories of Scripture suddenly became very personal. So maybe, just maybe, there's some wisdom in these ancient Scriptures that could help you answer the what now question. Maybe there are some truths that will unlock hope in your life once again. Maybe there's a way of life that you've yet to discover. I once read a statement that really struck me. If you don't change your beliefs, your life will be like this forever. Is that good news? Think about that for a second. Why did you pick this book up? Why did your friend give it to you? You're probably at a critical crossroads in your life where you're trying to answer the what next question or the why is this happening question. One thing you probably realize is something has to change. You need some answers. You need to change some patterns. Your hope needs to be renewed. So who knows? Maybe this book could be the catalyst for you. The Bible is full of stories about everyday men and women whose plans didn't work out. It's full of people who are trying to figure out what to do with a life that wasn't turning out the way they expected. People like you. People who really need hope in the midst of a Plan B.